Oh, Bill. Bill, everybody loves you.
Oh, I don't know about that.
What is the TV show? I think it was maybe a sitcom or something in the 80s or 90s where the producer became part of the cast. Do you know what I'm talking
about? Oh, gosh, I don't know.
It was a regular television series. I thought maybe it was Murphy Brown and Miles, the producer, who became a regular part of the cast. But the character was just a producer. He's kind of supposed to be kind of behind the scenes, but people enjoyed his character so much, he became more in the forefront. So that's what I think of you, Bill. Even though supposedly you're behind the scenes, everybody loves you.
Okay, well. Oh, I don't know about that, but you know, when I come on, I usually try to lighten it up. I need to lighten it up. I'm supposed to follow an act with Bob and Ronald Reagan and Alexander the Great and Caesar. Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. I come to Betty Caesar, not to praise him. But anyway.
Well, I want to know, Bill, from myself, how did you get started with the radio thing?
If by radio thing you mean Achieve Radio, it was kind of a synchronistic accident. Way back in my youth, in the late 60s and early 70s, I interned at some radio and TV stations and was studying, you know, radio technology, primarily the nuts and bolts, the actual, in those days, tubes mostly, but also the, you know, the production aspects. Then I switched gears, went into a flying career, spent 29 and a half years as a professional pilot, which ended rather suddenly when my flight surgeon told me, guess what, you're not going to get licensed. Not only that, we're sending you to the big hospital to get your heart cut out and replumbed. How do you like that? So it was a rather sudden career change.
Hold on. You were a professional. Yeah. Did you fly like for an airline or something?
Actually, I jokingly recall what I did off-road aviation. The last several years, I was a wildland firefighter. I started in aviation as, of all things, a crop duster pilot, spreading all those chemicals that Carolyn hates so much. And then I moved over into wildland firefighting. Anybody from the West is familiar with that. They see the airplanes on the news dropping the red stuff on wildfires all over the West and sometimes back East. Did that up until 2001 when my flight surgeon, you know, gave me the news that you're done and we're going to have to cut your heart out and replumb it to even keep you alive.
So this now makes sense to me about why you had said that what Ion said to you about contrails made sense, and this whole chemtrail thing, and this is, are there such thing as chemtrails, Bill? This whole chemical paranoia that they're just pouring stuff out in the sky?
Okay, here's the deal. There's a phenomenon which has been around since the first airplanes managed to get up above about 10, 15,000 feet. It's called a persistent contrail. Okay. And when you burn a hydrocarbon fuel in atmosphere, one of the byproducts is water vapor. If the outside air temperature is very cold, it condenses and or freezes a short distance behind the airplane. Under most atmospheric conditions, within a few minutes, that will evaporate away and dissipate. If the relative humidity and temperature and everything at the particular altitude are in the right place, contrails can last for hours. In fact, they can even act like a seed. And there was some published, quote, scientific studies done back in the 70s about persistent contrails actually growing. Acted just like the pebble thrown into a still lake on a below freezing day. When the lake is all water, you throw a pebble into it and the disturbance causes the whole lake to freeze almost instantly. That same type of scenario. And so that's a persistent contrail, which 99.999% of what people think are chemtrails are actually persistent contrails. In fact, during World War II, when you know, the U.S. and Great Britain would send over 1,000 bombers at a time to bomb Germany, on occasion the persistent contrails would expand and become a solid overcast, which used to really irritate the hell out of the photo recon pilots that would fly in later, because they had a solid overcast, and if they went underneath it, then they got shot at. Any rate, now the other side to that is there does appear to be a lot of evidence that there could very well be some ultra-top secret research projects going on. There's probably a very top secret military squadron somewhere that is spraying stuff out for research programs. For what? Nobody knows. I don't have a clue. I don't know who would. But it's vastly more rare than what people think, because the average person has never looked up and noticed a persistent contrail in their life, and then they hear a radio show about chemtrails, and then they see persistent contrails, and they think that's a chemtrail every time. And the short answer is no, it's not. If there are chemtrails, they're a very, very, very small percentage of what you see in the sky. Is that all clear?
That is so perfectly clear. I'm going to take that excerpt and I'm going to publish it, because that was fantastic. And I hope my friend Mike is listening, and because we have this conversation on an ongoing basis. And so that was great. Yes, that's very clear. And I just didn't understand the whole thing, how I you know, well, Greg pointed out to me that it's not even financially feasible to put stuff like that, the weight of it, the fuel would take, and then dump it out in a plane. It's just, he said, that's just retarded. No company would do it. You know, it's not like,
yeah,
how you would.
You couldn't, and you know, most of the people that whine about chemtrails, I mean, I had one individual that, you know, came on and said, you should see what they did. They were making X's all over the sky where I live. And then a week later, we had thunderstorms. Well, okay, if you'd looked at the weather map, you'd have seen those thunderstorms were in California a week earlier. This person lived on the East Coast. And if you'd bothered to look at an aeronautical chart, you would have seen that right over where you live, there's four low-altitude, what they call Victor Airways, and five or six high-altitude airways called jet routes that all intersect right over your house as they're queuing up to go to, you know, JFK and Boston and wherever all else on the East Coast. So, you know, people don't do their homework, and it's easier to listen to somebody ranting on Internet radio, which I've had them rant on a cheap radio, and I just giggle and ignore it.
Right. But you did say that, I think I heard you say that when you heard Ion kind of dismiss that whole thing, you were like, okay, well, they might be onto something. I mean, I can maybe listen to this for a minute longer.
Yeah. You know, Ion does this a lot. He plays into popular misconceptions just to avoid stirring up controversy, I think. And since there are so many, quote, true believers of the whole chemtrail thing, he just said, you know, send your congressman a letter and tell him to, you know, I want more chemtrails. I want them right over my house, you know, on and on and on. All kinds of stuff like that. And, you know, I took that as they are well aware of what the real situation is and just didn't see any need to go into it. because when you break people's belief systems, it leaves kind of a vacuum, and frequently they get really pissy.
You're right.
As you're well aware, yeah.
Exactly. So, okay, so we got the airplane thing cleaned up. Okay, so let's go back to 2001, and this was before or after 9/11 that you had to have. So you had heart surgery.
Yeah, multiple bypass, very, very big time, six-way, as a matter of fact, which is like they couldn't figure out why I was still alive type of a thing, much less flying just a few months earlier. It was, okay, prior to, it was actually the winter of 2001, went in for the surgery, and I spent about the next 6 months, exchanging threatening letters with the FAA in Oklahoma City, so forth and so on, and did manage to get licensed, to fly the, 2001 season. So I was actually fighting wildfire up in Twin Falls, Idaho, the day of 9/11.
Oh, wow.
And after all that, I decided none of this is worth it anymore.
Right. You know,
getting a flight physical went from an afternoon at the doctor's office and $75 to 3 or 4 months arguing with the FAA and spending about $3,000 on it. So I figured there was better things to do. And then what happened to aviation following 9/11 was, oh, it was ugly. And it still is.
Right. So you, how did you come up upon Achieve Radio? Did you just invent it out of thin air, or what happened?
Absolute accident, actually. After that flying season, I got a call from an old friend who had also retired as a pilot a few years before me. And he said, "Hey, Bill, do you know anything about radio shows?" And I said, "Well, yeah. You know, I used to work radio and TV stations when I was younger." And he said, "Do you know anything about websites?" And I says, "Yeah, I build them in my spare time." You know anything about computers? "Well, yeah, that goes along with the websites, and I've been writing software since the 70s. "Oh, okay. I just started a radio show on AM, and it was 1100 AM in Phoenix, and he needed a website designer and somebody to help him with his computer. So I jumped in the car and went down to Phoenix, and, you know, we got that show on the air and got his websites up, and we were going through the usual process of getting ready to try to syndicate to additional markets. And it dawned on me, you know, this internet radio thing is brand new. Maybe that's the new cool route to syndication. So we started broadcasting it on the internet, and it dawned on me that we hadn't syndicated a radio show. We had created a radio station, so to speak. So we started advertising for people to go on the station. And the first person that showed up was an angel card reader, which I had never even heard of angel cards. I'd heard of tarot cards. Everybody's heard of tarot cards, but I had no clue what an angel card was. Any rate, so I listened to her spiel and had her do a angel card reading on me and all that. And I thought, well, this will probably be entertaining to the plebs, you know, so... we put her on the air, and then some other various psychics and whatnot heard that there was a radio station in Phoenix that didn't have any problem airing psychics and whatnot. So the originally the station, we intended it to be a lot of holistic health because following my heart being chopped out and replumbed, I got very interested in that subject, which I'd had a passing interest prior. And my buddy who started the whole thing was very much into holistic health, had been since the 60s. So we envisioned it that way. And then when all the psychics started showing up, we just said, okay, well, let's do, you know, psychic plus holistic. And went in that direction. And it just, you know, went from there. And we also... you know, had some general interest shows originally. We had a home improvement show And that's kind of where James Martinez came in, because he called me about doing a financial show and wanted to know if I had any problems and if I was going to take editorial control or try to censor them. And I said, no, it says right in our, you know, guidelines that we don't censor everything. We just prefer you, you know, avoid some really bad topics, which he was fine with, that he didn't, you know, bother with anyway. So that's how James showed up. And then you know how Bob showed up. So,
wow, very cool. So you're not in Phoenix, though, are you? Are you in Phoenix?
No, no. I was there originally. Of course, we started that that first seed show on 1100 AM KFNX there, which I was familiar with from years past. But we started up there and then started the internet thing and then said the heck with the AM, because nobody listened to it anyway. Dumped the AM portion and moved it into an actual business location. We had an actual walk-in studio in Glendale, which is a suburb of Phoenix, and you know, broadcast there for several years, probably 6 years, something like that. Right on the main street in Glendale. We even had a window area where the hosts would get up on a little stage, and they were right in the front window, so people walking by could see them broadcasting. And we had room for an audience, the whole thing, regular radio studio. And then as time went on and people got more familiar with the internet, I mean, originally internet radio, when we first started it in late 01, early 02, I had some guy ask me, he said, what is internet radio? How does that work? Does it print out on your printer or what? he had no clue that he'd never seen a PC with speakers before. And but obviously, you know, and particularly with the advent of iPods and YouTube and those types of media, and of course now the internet is a primary media, not a secondary. That's all changed pretty fast in 12 years. But at some point there, it got to where even the local show talent did not care to brave rush hour traffic and so forth to come into the studio, and everybody started broadcasting remote using Skype or telephone or whatever their particular mode was. And it just seemed silly. I have a home here in South Dakota, and it just seemed silly to be renting a place to live and renting a business place, you know, about $1,500, $2,000 a month all told for all that. When I could come back up here and do it all out of the home I already had. So basically did that.
Very cool. Very cool. So now in your, in the, what you're doing right now, what would you say in your own, what are some of the best shows that you've had on? Like, what are the things, how long, so you've been doing this like 14, 15 years?
Basically, yeah, since, 13, it would be, very early in, 12, very early in 02, is when we were really actually on the air. Yeah, that would be right, very early in 02. And I think the first live broadcast was like, March or April of 02, somewhere in there, which was the Angel Card Lady I was talking about a minute ago. The best shows, I don't know. We've had so many of them. I mean, the most prolific, clearly, is All of Iandom. Most prolific I've ever had, thanks primarily to Bob, of course. Although you and Matthew and, you know, Carolyn, that amounts to quite a good chunk every week. You know, it generates a lot of material. Best shows, I don't know. We've had some pretty good naturopathic doctors. We've had some, you know, entertaining psychics, let me put it that way. Some of them that have some real talent. My opinion of the psychic community at large is that about 75% or more of them are just simply delusional. of the other 25%, maybe a few percent of those have extreme talent. And even at that, you know, they're a long way from 100% accurate. But they do exceed probability by a wide margin, so there's something going on there.
And what do you what was your experience when you first encountered Ion? I mean, what did you think?
Oh, I've talked about that. I thought he was as phony as a $4 bill.
really?
Quite
yeah.
Just because of I finally have over the years figured out what really changed it was the fact that the RNA drops came out and they work. So there was obviously something going on other than, you know, just a lot of BS. The problem I had with Ion in the early days was an awful lot of just off-the-cuff wrong answers, disinformation, things that, you know, and I'm not talking about science. I'm talking more about, in my realm, technology. Somebody would ask a computer question, and he would pop something off, and it would be total nonsense. And I finally, and this applied to other things, you know, historical stuff and whatever. And, you know, historical stuff, you can talk about, which Bob does frequently, the fact that history as written, first of all, it only applies to this universe. And second of all, you don't know who the hell wrote it. So you don't know how accurate it is. Nobody was there to see it. But, you know, he said a lot of things that contradict history. I let that go because I know history is what it is, and we don't have a clue anyway. We just have what somebody wrote about it later. But brass tacks technology I consider to be different. And, but what Ion does, which, you know, the chemtrail thing is a very clear point to that. Why bother to correct people's, you know, belief system? So just, you know, say whatever they expect to hear because that's not the point. The point is to get them to comprehend the big picture. And answering questions about how do I fix the networking in my Mac, which I remember came in once years ago in cash flow. Somebody in quicked in, how do I fix the networking in my Mac? I mean, you know, for God's sake, call, you know, Geek Squad, you know, give it a break. Has nothing to do with the big picture. And that's why I've mentioned that you can really hear the difference when you listen to the early cash flow with Ion, and then listen to Eben Ray's interviews with Ion at approximately the same span of time. There is a very marked difference in Ion's manner of speaking and in his content and the way he addressed questions. Bob says that Ion had a real issue with a lot of things about cash flow. In those early days, and so he was somewhat different. Bob is, you know, agrees with me on that point, that there was a definite difference. Whereas Eben Ray's situation, it was a kind of a different audience, I think. Yeah, because of the way he just blew things off so frequently, that bothered me a lot. And I really thought he was just full of it, you know. I've had a lot of quote-unquote channels. Of course, Bob hates me to use the word channel, but that's the easiest way to describe it. You know, somebody says, what is JW? I said, well, don't tell Bob I told you this, but he's kind of like a channel. And then they go, oh, they get it, you know. Because how the hell else are you going to describe, you know, the Ion JW thing? So any rate, but yeah, it's, I started to see after quite a long time, and particularly as, you know, the RNA drops came out and so forth, and listening to some of the private sessions that he would blow off the trivial crap a lot because he wasn't terribly interested in it. And frequently would blow it off just with nonsense.
Very good, very good. Yes, I think that's people have to make their way with ION, you know, how they perceive the information. And I think if I would have had to rely exclusively on what they were saying on the public radio, it would be very difficult for me to have fully embraced what they were saying. But I had so many personal sessions, and that's where the rubber meet the road. Even it was funny the other night when Greg said, is there anything I can do about my dad? And ION went right to it. They said, well, you know, there's just this thing called you got to fill your bladder, but you don't want to get up in the middle of the night. And that is exactly what caused Greg's dad to get so sick. He quit drinking fluids because he's in pain in his hip, and he did not want to have to get up and go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. When you have something like that come through, you know, that quick and just boom, and then the next day, Greg's dad made a 550% improvement. Was like he'd never been sick.
Wow.
I mean, everybody at the hospital and everywhere was like, what the hell just happened? You know, that's where when it gets real personal like that, it's much easier to grasp what's going on with ION. But, yeah, if you have to keep it in the public forum, it can get a little dicey. Yeah. So what's and what are you expecting for Achieve Radio? What are your goals for Achieve Radio? Like, what are you enjoying about what you're doing now?
I mean, it beats working for a living. Okay. It's interesting because shortly after, time-wise, to peg it for the ION crowd, shortly after ION ceased communicating, at that point, what, 2011?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Around that period of time, I had pretty well decided that this had all run its course, and I started, looking to get back into the real workforce, so to speak, and finding something worthwhile to do, and was pretty much planning on either, you know, letting it wind down to a point and then just shutting the doors, so to speak. And then Bob came along with we started doing the extended cash flow on, I think it was Thursday night. And then the whole payday thing came about. And, I decided, well, what the heck? Just, roll with this. So I haven't really revised or changed any plans. I'm just taking it day to day, kind of relaxing and allowing and, que sera, sera type of an attitude at this point. 10, 12 years ago when we started it, I predicted that internet radio would expand by probably 10,000% in the next decade, and it did. Unfortunately, the competition expanded by 100,000%. So, there are literally, as opposed to hundreds of stations on the internet, there are tens of thousands. And I just, I'm not too interested in really diving in generically, so to speak. Somewhat topic specific, like the ION thing, that's the way to go. And that's why I've let Achieve Radio kind of slide over to probably 75% ionic material, with just a handful of psychics and other stuff to kind of bring random people, keep random people coming, walking in the door, so to speak, tuning in from time to time. Short version is I don't really have any plans at this point. Grow it or not, depending on what feels right as it goes along here.
Very cool. Well, I know we're about 2 minutes till the top of the hour, and I wanted to just bring you on, first of all, because I wanted to know your background and just how you got into this whole thing, but also to just say, publicly that I truly appreciate everything that you've done. I appreciate the freedom that we have on Achieve Radio. I know I appreciate what you've done with Radio Free Ion and letting me build that, you know, stream and all the different things that you've had to do. And I just appreciate having Achieve Radio, as it does feel like the home of Ion, so to speak. And it feels good to be here, and you're so great. And I know that, you know, you do have a lot of fans. I know people miss the, the Bill show if they can't, you know, talk with you and after you get off with Bob and all the other things. I mean, I don't think you do that anymore, right? Because Bob goes until the next morning.
Yeah, it kind of depends on what's going on. You know, to me, the most fun part of the whole payday thing was the Brian show on the breaks, and we don't take breaks anymore, so that went away. the after show was typically, frequently it was Bob, Leon, and me.
Very small crowd.
And we'd chat and talk all kinds of stuff, and I'd call Bob out, and he would... or whatever, we'd go on and on. Now it's gotten to be where there's 20, 30 people, and they carry on just fine, so I'm not really needed. And besides that, my day schedule has changed a little bit. So I just, it was a little bit of a hassle to stay up that late, put it that way.
Right. Well, I hope you'll come on with us again and stay on, and feel free to pop in. And I know Bob calls on you, to pop in. But you are well loved and well appreciated, and I'm very grateful for you and what you do and what you've provided for all of us who are enjoying this whole new situation that we're in, which none of us really know what it is. But like you say, the drops work, and it's fun.
All right. Well, thank you, Jenny. And, yeah, it's not like I'm not here, so just let me know.
Right on. All right. Well, everybody, this has been the Wednesday Show on Achieve Radio. Thanks, everybody, for listening.